today on Family Talk.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Family Talk. I'm your host, as usual every day, Dr. James Dobson. On today's program, we have a special treat for you. Dr. Tim Clinton, my colleague, had a chance to fill in for me at the microphones recently, and he interviewed author and speaker Eric Metaxas at the AACC World Conference in Nashville, Tennessee last month. AACC stands for the American Association of Christian Counselors. That association includes 50,000 counselors, and it's led by, again, Dr. Tim Clinton. As I hope many of you know, today, this very day, is the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. And Eric's new book, Martin Luther, The Man Who Rediscovered God and Changed the World, is the focus of this interview today. You'll learn about the life of Martin Luther and his passion for standing up for God and the truth of his word. Eric has written a number of other books, and I've interviewed him on most of them here on Family Talk. They include the New York Times number one bestseller, Bonhoeffer, Pastor, Martyr, Prophet, Spy. He's also the host of a nationally syndicated radio program heard in over 120 cities nationwide. He speaks to thousands around the world each year. So let's listen to this interview now on today's edition of Family Talk.
Eric, thanks for joining us here in studio.
My pleasure.
And we're delighted to have you. As we get started, I want to talk about modern-day Christianity. Eric, wasn't that long ago, there was a real beatdown of the church, a lot of intimidation, confusion. Where do you think we're at right now?
Now, when are you referring to when you say that, just so I'm tracking with you?
Over the last 10, 20 years.
Yeah, you know, Dr. Dobson is a part of that narrative, that there was a time when the church finally understood that it needs to get involved in the culture and in politics. It understood that. But as with everything, sometimes things go too far in this direction, or they go, or some people get upset, or some people, you know, it's one of those things that we'll never get it right, but we have an obligation to try. And what I think happened, which is what you're saying, is that a lot of people just said, oh, you know, that wasn't working. We're going to skip that. We're not going to be involved in anything political or anything like that because we just want to preach the gospel. And I really think that that's unbiblical. It's theologically nonsensical. There's a time when living out the gospel means being political. So the only question is how, not whether. And I think that a lot of people in the church, as I say, they got fatigued, and they're making the same mistake as making an idol of politics, which is wrong. They're making a mistake of saying that I can't be political. And that is something that the church has always struggled with. What's that balance? What does it mean to be a Christian today? And I really think today a big part of being a Christian, for good or for ill, means living in the culture in a way that sometimes bumps up into politics.
Some are saying there's a stirring going on, Eric, that people are wanting to have their voice heard again, trying to galvanize or maybe mobilize together. Do you think this is stirring spiritually, I guess, first of all?
I have no doubt about it. I would say yes. I am personally very hopeful. I mean, you know, when you recognize God's hand, you just know nothing can stand against it. And there are things that are happening right now that I have no doubt whatever that God is moving, that the church has an opportunity in America right now.
And what will the church do with the opportunity?
That's the question.
That's the big question.
Right.
Deep appreciation for the boldness that you have for such a time as this. I think God has raised you up to give you a strong voice. What's interesting to me is somewhere in your writing career here, you jumped into this biography piece, and I guess you started out with William Wilberforce, right?
Yeah.
What led you to write that book on Wilberforce?
This gives me an opportunity to brag on God, because I had no idea and no plans and zero desire ever to write biographies, ever. Absolutely not. It was one of those weird things where it was in 2007, it was the bicentennial of the abolition of the slave trade. The big thing that happened in 1807, William Wilberforce finally, after almost 20 years, succeeded in Parliament in abolishing this utter wickedness, this abomination called the slave trade, which in my book Amazing Grace, I talk about it. And I guess because of that, they decided to make a movie called Amazing Grace. And somebody contacted me and said, would you like to write a biography? Because it's the bicentennial, this movie's coming out. Mm. And I thought, gosh, I never even thought of that ever, a biography. I've had all kinds of ideas. I wrote the biography on Wilberforce. I realized this is a story for the church today. I hadn't taken the job on to write the biography to speak to the church today, but I realized in writing it, this shows us that it's possible to go from a deeply broken culture that if one man is obedient to God, the whole thing can change. So what if a whole bunch of us are obedient to God? What could happen? So when I was saying that Wilberforce abolished the slave trade, he's famous for that.
Right.
But the reality is that when he became a Christian, he saw an entirely broken culture, not just, oh, this terrible slave trade. The slave trade was just the worst example of a series of things in the culture. When you don't have the gospel in a culture, it's basically pagan. So the culture was deeply pagan. So this man committed himself not just to abolish the slave trade, but he believed God called him also to deal with everything else, to deal with this wicked culture. And so he applied himself for decades faithfully and passionately. And by the end of it, he dies in 1833. Not only is the slave trade abolished, but slavery itself is abolished. While he's on his deathbed, literally, he hears that slavery itself was abolished. And then a host of other social ills were dealt with, so that by the time he goes to meet the Lord in 1833, the world is outrageously different from when he started in politics. Now, this is an example to us that if you think things are hopeless, first of all, that's from the devil. God does not want us to be hopeless. He wants us to say, even if I fail, great, I'm going to die trying, right?
Yes.
So when Christians say, like, oh, everything's going to hell, and they're almost happy about it, like,
yeah,
let the world go to hell, it's all going to burn. No, that's not biblical. That's garbage. We are supposed to be joyful and hopeful and passionate in the midst of whatever we're going through. And so basically, that's the story of Wilberforce. And you look at how bad things were. People think things are bad now, and they are. Things were actually as bad or worse when he started. And you look at where he left things. The Victorian era is a story of the church being involved in social outreach, helping the poor, doing all stuff that the church had not done in any large scale. Some monks had done it, but suddenly culture got excited. It was because of Jesus, and it was because of a man named Wilberforce. And, you know, it's one of the biggest stories. Everybody should know that story. So when I read the book, I felt kind of guilty. How did I not know this? And then I get passionate about wanting to share it with everybody.
Bonhoeffer.
Well,
second one.
Yeah, and I, as much as I never wanted to write a biography, I certainly didn't want to write a second biography, but people kept asking me, and I thought, well, there's only one person that I would ever really want to write about besides Wilberforce, and that is this amazing man, Bonhoeffer, who, yeah, because of his faith, very similar, stood up against a tide of people saying either we want to go along with the Nazis because of out of ignorance, or saying, I don't want to be political. That's not my thing. I'm just going to preach the gospel. Meanwhile, Jews are going in boxcars, you know, to Treblinka and Dachau. And he was a voice that said to the church in the 30s and obviously in the 40s, when the war broke, he was saying to the German church, wake up, be the church. Don't be just involved in piety and prayer. You've got to speak truth to power, to use the cliche. You've got to be willing to put your life on the line for the Jews, for those who are suffering. Mm. That's Jesus calls you to do that. And if you don't do that, you're not obeying God. I mean,
salt
it was
light.
Really a strong word, and he was alone in this. People didn't understand him. Shame on you. And that's really what Wilberforce was saying to the Christians of his day and what Bonhoeffer was saying to the Christians of his day. If you stand by while this wickedness goes on, what kind of Christian are you?
Yeah. You're listening to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Dr. Tim Clinton, president of the American Association of Christian Counselors, hosting for Dr. Dobson today. Our special in-studio guest, New York Times bestselling author, leading Christian voice, advocating for the things of Christ, Eric Metaxas.
I'm blushing. Cut it out.
Come on now.
Stop that.
Hey, listen, I'm holding in my hand something special. And it's a brand new piece of work that's just come out. And it's a third biography.
Yeah.
Martin Luther. the man who rediscovered God and changed the world.
Yeah.
This is amazing. I just got a copy today. This is the 500.
Exactly 500 years.
500 years.
Exactly 500. October 31st, 1517 was the day we believe that he nailed the 95 Theses onto the door of the Wittenberg Castle Church. And that effectively marks the Reformation. That's when it started. That's exactly 500 years ago. It's an amazing thing. And like a lot of the stuff that I write about, I didn't have a clue how amazing it was until I began to do the research and look into it. And then you realize, again, I'm embarrassed. How did I not know this truly, truly amazing story? I mean, this is the most entertaining, stunning, world-changing kind of story, and I really didn't have a clue about it.
When you think about the work you did in understanding Luther, what was the one or two things that just stood out to you about him as a man, I guess? Let's go there first.
Well, he was incredibly intense. And, you know, like everybody, we have good and bad. Each of us, our strengths can become our weaknesses. You know this as a counselor, and you understand that to be super intense has an upside and a downside. The upside is that he saw this whole thing through when nobody else would have been able to see through, you know, to stand against the power arrayed against him, the emperor and the pope basically telling you, shut up, or we will burn you, we will torture you. He was unable to shut up. He was so intense about the truth and what he saw in the Word of God that we are all in his debt for having stood at a time when most other people would have figured out a way to weasel sideways so they didn't need to take the full brunt of it. But it's funny because what got him to that place was also his intensity. He decides, I want to achieve heaven through good works. You know, I want to get there. I'm going to climb that mountain of good works, and I'm going to confess every sin, and I want to perfect myself morally. And now anybody else who tries to do that, you know, we'll get it right, we'll get it wrong, we'll do our best. For him, that wasn't enough. He needed to earn heaven by his good acts. And he was so intense and so focused that he just about drove himself insane, and he realized, I can't do it. You wouldn't go so far that you realize it's impossible. He understood, this is not possible. I must be missing something. And that's when he discovered the gift of grace. And he wouldn't have gotten there unless he was trying so intensely to achieve heaven and to climb the moral ladder. So it's kind of a funny story in some ways.
Wow. What were some of the big concerns, I think, that Luther had with the church? And is there a parallel that you're seeing in modern-day life?
Well, there's so many parallels. That's what's so funny. You write these biographies, and it's really not about history as much as it is about where we are right now.
Exactly.
It just illuminates things, and you go, my goodness.
As we started out the program, I mean, we know where we're at. We're absolutely in a wild place.
Yeah, we're in a tough spot. But listen, we who call ourselves Christians are supposed to believe that we can do all things through Christ who strengthens us. And if only we'll have the real faith, because a lot of people have faith in half measures. Luther did not. He is an amazing example of a man who had adamantine faith, uncompromising, staggering level of faith, where he would look at you and think, like, are you crazy? Do you not fear God more than man? I mean, he really lived it.
As someone goes through this book, they see some of the characteristics of someone who you wouldn't have picked him out in a class type thing. You know, and say, he's going to change the world.
No.
That's not the kid right there.
Oh, and by the way, he didn't want to change the world. He didn't want to do that. He was just kind of minding his own
business.
But God
burst something inside him that just absolutely just mushroomed and grew and he couldn't like silence it. He became brash.
That's what's so funny is that, let's put it this way. He was so miserable in trying to earn heaven through religious acts. It was such a misery that he said, I must be missing something. So he starts digging into the scriptures. Now, keep in mind, in his day, nobody was digging into the scriptures.
Wow.
That's just a fact. And so he was, and he said, there's got to be in here someplace, I think I may be able to find the golden key to give me my answer. And he studied for years. I mean, it's astounding. And finally, God reveals in 1517, the same year of the posting of the indulgences, so 500 years ago right now, although the two are sort of not related, they're related, but they're also not related, he discovers this issue of grace that, wait a minute, It's God's righteousness. It's not my righteousness. God gives me his gift of his righteousness. It's so clear, and it blew his mind, and it blew his mind so much because it upended this whole path that he was on. He thought, no, I don't need to climb a ladder to heaven. God's going to come down to me. I don't need to move. I don't need to climb one rung. I need to stand here and say, I can't do it. And this was a huge revelation. Now, of course, I say he rediscovered God, that God had been obscured in many ways, but this is nothing new. This is Jesus. This is Paul. But for a number of centuries, the church had allied itself with power in such a way that this became so obscured that you had to be a nut like Martin Luther to rediscover it.
Did he battle with depressions and
yeah. Oh, yeah. Seriously. I mean, he called it Anfechtungen. And it's a weird thing because it's hard to understand exactly what it was. I get the impression that it was a combination of a depressive kind of personality, like super intense, artistic, sensitive, but also spiritual warfare, demonic attack. And when you read some of the episodes that he went through, I put them in detail because I think we need to understand this is real. But it was real demonic attack. It wasn't goofy. It was like, this is the real thing. This man is going to change the universe through his actions, and the devil was not happy. And so he went through, you know, some hell.
I remember reading a little bit about Psalm 46, that it was often read by him as a place of refuge and strength. And isn't it interesting? Elohim, or God, is our refuge and our strength. He's a present help during times of trouble.
Yeah.
You can imagine how he
That's
must
right.
have felt facing everything he did. But verse 2, therefore we won't fear. See, therefore we won't fear, though yeah. the earth be removed and the mountains be cast into the yeah. depths of the sea. No matter what comes our way, all
That's
that
right.
metaphoric language you could say
right.
from verse 2 down to 10,
right.
and therefore be still and know that I am God.
Yeah.
And the idea of literally the dropping of the hands, you know, that's like a prize fighter.
Yeah.
Cease to strive.
Yeah.
Relax.
Yeah. Right.
Know that I am God, that I will be exalted. Can you imagine?
And that, to me, that is faith. And God calls us to have nothing less. He doesn't say, well, you know, these are the heroes, but you're going to be, you know, second class Christian. No, he calls every single one of us to this. And by the way, it's either true or it's not. And if it's true, you need to remind yourself over and over and over again. And I think that in the stories of some of these heroes of the faith, like Martin Luther, you, as you're reading it, you're thinking, of course, how did I, you know, relax my faith on this issue? The normal Christian life is to have this kind of faith. And even for Luther, it was a constant battle. It is a constant battle, but we're called to the battle.
Yeah. Eric, when someone encounters your work, what about this new work on Martin Luther? What do you hope they take away from it? I guess maybe what really did you take away from it all?
Well,
and what's the gift to the reader?
Well, for me, it's always, I hope it'll draw people closer to Jesus. I mean, the gospel is put over and over in this book so that a non-believer reading this book will encounter it and understand, oh my goodness, I've never heard this before. I always thought of Christianity as the kind of Christianity Luther was fighting against. You know, this dead religion, power, and all that. And suddenly I encountered this man in the middle of it fighting against what I hated myself with. It's why I rejected the church, you know. And I hope that people will see that there's something real and beautiful and green and alive and that they didn't even know was there. And I kind of feel like that is the story of Luther, is actually seeing God alive and beautiful and true. And, you know, and I hope people who kind of forgot that or never knew that will encounter that in the story.
Hey, Eric, I want to go back just one more piece related to Luther. His stand at the Diet of Worms piece. Can you just take us there for a moment?
Yeah. First of all, I'm not going to get into this, but right in the beginning of the book, I'll leave it for the reader because it's a surprise. There's a mind-blowing surprise. When I figured this out, it totally blew my mind. And anybody who reads it you'll see, and it's directly related to Worms, but it was one of those miraculous things where you say, if this is not God, this can't be a coincidence. This is insane. But the punchline, or the bottom line rather, is that in 1521, he is finally called to stand before the emperor. Now, again, you learn so much history. The Holy Roman Emperor was Charles I of Spain, and the Holy Roman Empire was all of these different principalities. So you have princes, dukes, archbishops, and bishops, and they all represent these different areas and archbishoprics and duchies. And they're all there in this room assembled, and they are arrayed in fur and gold, and these are the wealthiest of the wealthy. And basically, Luther is a humble little monk, you know, probably dirty and very humble. And he is ushered in to stand before these people. He was also not just in front of the emperor, which is a stunning thing for a monk, the legate from the Vatican of the Pope standing there representing the papacy. So he's standing before Pope and emperor, and they're going to question him.
Wow.
And they basically wanted him to, in 1521, to come in and say, are these your books? And they had all his books. It was like a setup, right? Are these your books? Yes. Are you willing to recant what's in these books? Yes or no? Revoco. Revoke. Do you revoke it? The Latin was revoco. He understood, first of all, it's more complicated. Secondly, if you don't tell me what your problem is very specifically, how do I even know what I'm repenting of or revoking or recanting, whatever? So it really comes to this huge showdown, but he was not cocky. He was thinking, I'm here to help the church. I'm here to show the church what I have discovered, which I know is of God. And by the way, if I'm wrong, show me. And if you show me, I will recant, I will revoke what I have said instantly with joy. But you've got to show me. They were unwilling to show him. They just wanted to say, shut up and recant, yes or no. And he said, well, based on what I know, I cannot recant. If you're not going to show me, here I stand, I can do no other. He didn't say it again like in a cocky way, like he was speaking truth to power. We read it that way retrospectively. But the point is, at the time, he was just saying, what do you want me to do? I fear God more than I fear what you can do to me. You haven't shown me my error. It's a moment in history where truth meets power in the most dramatic way. It's a stunning moment where truth meets power. Because keep in mind that the powers that be had always said, we determine what is truth. We are the church. We determine. You are just a monk. So it's like a hinge in history. From that moment on, I say that that day a door was opened and we walked into the future. That the last 500 years, everything that we think of as normal, democracy, tolerance, religious liberty, everything that we think of as the modern world came through the door opened by Martin Luther, or rather opened by God, because Luther was willing to stand that day. It's a stunning moment.
Eric, speak to our listeners. Bring this all the way back home to them. What's the big final takeaway to our listeners at Family Talk?
There's probably a couple of things. I would say, first of all, it's important that we know history, because I think that, you know, when I understood this story, it's kind of like with a number of my books, my book on America, I'm ashamed that I didn't know this, because it's not like it's so complicated, but it really helps you see the present dramatically, clearly. This story is a story that so many people are living today. Maybe you're in the workplace and you're afraid of this, you're afraid of that. The story of Luther really helps you focus on, what am I living for? Am I actually living for God? Can I live for God? What does it mean? I really think that in writing these biographies, and particularly this one, of course, because it's the new one, but I feel we need these examples, and the Lord has given them to us, just as if we have examples in the scripture of these stories. We need to know, who is the great cloud of witnesses? Who are these people? And these were people. These are not perfect. Martin Luther was in many ways flawed. Yeah. But if a flawed guy like that can change the world, what is God saying to us? I really think that God certainly doesn't put Luther ahead of us. Each one of us, God is asking us, okay, what about you? And I think that we need to be reminded, and we need to know history so that we can speak with some authority, that we don't just feel like we're living in the present, you know, watching TV all day long and getting upset about the news, that we're standing in history and the Lord is looking at us right now in the way that he looked at Luther and the way that he looked at all of his servants over the centuries, that we need to take our lives that seriously.
Yeah. The oft-quoted Edmund Burke statement, all this necessary for evil to triumph is for good men, and I'll add women, to do nothing.
Precisely. That's exactly right.
That's it. Eric, what a gift to all of us. Your brand new work, the biography of Martin Luther, the man who rediscovered God, changed the world. What a great piece of work to challenge us to grow and to stand in our faith.
Well, you've been listening to an interview that Dr. Tim Clinton conducted with author and speaker Eric Metaxas at the AACC World Conference in Nashville, Tennessee last month. If you're interested in Eric's new book, Martin Luther, The Man Who Rediscovered God and Changed the World, go to our website at drjamesdobson.org, and you can find information about how to order your copy today. As always, we appreciate your prayers and support for the ministry of Family Talk. We simply could not do what we do without you. You can donate securely online to drjamesdobson.org or by calling our toll-free number, 877-732-6825. I'm your host, Dr. James Dobson, wishing you a blessed rest of your day.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.